Hello and welcome to Cornwall Woman. I'm just having a walk along a beach near Padstow and I'm about to record the next episode of Cornwall Woman, but I thought I'd do my links for this episode while I'm here out and about. I think I'm pretty much on my own on the beach. I have to say, there's nothing more luxurious than having a beach to yourself. And being on your own or being lonely is the subject of today's podcast.
If you are lonely, it's not the love you do not receive. It's the love you are unable to give. All that unused love filling bottle after bottle like homebrew under the stairs fermenting. And then the corks turn mouldy and the wine is given up as undrinkable and then it is forgotten about, then skipped.
I'm talking to Jane Pugh, who's an amazing writer, and she'll be reading some of her writing out in a bit after we've had a chat. So not all of my guests on Cornwall Woman are actually Cornish, but they have to have a Cornwall state of mind, and Jane Pugh has got that. Welcome, Jane Pugh, to Cornwall Woman. Very delighted to have you on the podcast. Thank you very much.
Delighted to be here.
So I've seen you perform quite a few times now with your amazing writing. And every time I've seen you, I think it's really fantastic. So we're going to have a little chat and also you're going to read some of your writing for us. We'll soon figure out from your accent that you're not from Cornwall originally.
No. I grew up in the northwest of England, in the countryside, but it was also industrial. And ended up in Cornwall in my mid-30s because I realised just how important the countryside is to me. It's not about a magazine lifestyle. It's not about flagstone floors. It's about where you most comfortably feel that you can be you. And that was Cornwall for me. People who live here, were born here and have made a life here, and people who move here have that innate need to be themselves.
You've had a very successful career in the past, working on some shows that we all know. Do you miss that?
I started out as a script reader and for the BBC, and then I was offered a job as a script editor in television drama. I worked on two great series. One was Peak Practice and the other was Ballykiss Angel. For me, the demands of the job were too intense because what I realised was my absolute objective in life is to be with my friends and family. If you're working in TV, that's not an option. And so I found myself in my mid-30s fed up of missing friends' weddings because of the demands of the job. So I bailed. And one thing that really attracted me to Cornwall and to Penwith was the variety of creativity and the variety of ways of telling stories. In TV drama, you've got formats. You know, it has to be an hour. When it's on the stage, when it's on location, there are many more things at your disposal. What I needed at that time in terms of my own practice was to break free of those formats and find different ways of finding and telling stories. Rural areas are often described as isolated or cut off, or that people are kind of strange and live on a farm on the top of Bodmin Moor. But I've found that it isn't, and I'm not the only one who says, you know, city life can be lonely. The kind of connectivity you get with human beings, animals and nature is anything but lonely, actually. And you also have to be brave, I think, to live in the countryside because, and I love this about this very rural area, is it doesn't care. You know, those hills are as old as time. The sea, she's the boss, that's what I think.
I like being put in your place by nature. You know, we're looking out the window here and you can see for a really long way and there's this massive sky and you know when it's really windy, you know when the weather's awful. You're not inured to nature and the seasons. And actually, what's helpful about that is that it kind of puts you in your place, I think.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more.
I'm really pleased you're going to read some of your writing for us. And I've seen you perform this, the longer version of it. And I have to say, I was really very deeply moved by it.
Thank you.
Health warning, there's some really sad bits coming up. But just tell us, just give us a little bit of context how you came to write about this subject.
The subject is loneliness. And I've always suffered from loneliness as a child. I was, because I'm so social, such a sociable person. And what I learnt is that there was a lack of being able to stop, turn round and face it. It felt on a kind of metaphorical level that people were running away from being on their own. There wasn't that moment of saying, stop running and just be on your own. And further, you can actually appreciate that kind of glorious isolation. My sister, who has a very busy family life with small children, my goodness me, she could do with 40 minutes being on her own. She could really do with that, you know, much as she loves her life. So it is, for those of us who are on our own, it's seeing the good in that, that it isn't something to be frightened of. And that's why I wrote this story.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. Life Girl by Jane Pugh. I was brought up in the countryside and it was very, very pretty. But I didn't care because I was indoors watching telly. One of the shows we all loved was Robinson Crusoe. Why? I don't know. Because all Robinson did was tramp across hot sand and keep his fire lit to alert passing ships. I live on my own with my dog Jack, so we're like Robinson and Man Friday. We've got sand between our toes. For years, I hadn't given Robinson Crusoe a moment's thought, but I've just finished watching telly again, this time a documentary about how people who live on their own are lonely and loneliness will shorten your lifespan. I haven't got a partner. I'm going to die young. I better think of something, and fast. I know, I'm going to have dozens and dozens of one-night stands just to stay alive. No, that won't work. I have very serious lower back issues. I can't have sex with lots of men unless they happen to be osteopaths. Over the next couple of days or so, I thought about a strategy for dealing with my impending doom, and I found myself returning to Robinson Crusoe. Not the children's drama, but the original book written by Daniel Defoe in 1719. Robinson spent years alone on a tropical island, and he survived. So the question is, could I be like Robinson Crusoe? Is it possible to survive in the world if you are on your own, or will you die of loneliness? I completely understand why we are afraid of being on our own. We are, after all, pack animals. We huddle together. Last Saturday night, I was out on the streets of Penzance, and I saw three women on a hen night dressed as cheerleaders. One of the women was being sick into a wheelie bin whilst her first bezzy was flagging down a cab and her second bezzy was queuing in the Penzance kebab shop. It was beautiful to see how they worked together as a team. Honestly, I welled up. So because we're pack animals, we automatically assume that if we're on our own, we will be lonely. We imagine painful scenarios. A single person who makes Sunday lunch just for themselves. a single person decorating the Christmas tree on their own. But is loneliness the same as being on your own? I'd better find out. Robinson sets off on his first voyage from his home in Hull down to London, and he is wretchedly seasick from the moment he stepped on board. Poor Robinson! But he was too stubborn to go home and put to sea again, this time travelling to North Africa. Robinson and me like being on the outside, looking in. It's safer there, less messy, less painful. We are what's known as avoiders, apparently. We're commitment phobes. Those of us who are made like that, not people who've suffered a breakup or a bereavement. We're Robbie Williams when he left Take That, and then the whole band split up. I was mortified. I lay awake at night, tossing and turning, knowing their solo albums would be crap. Thank God they reformed and did those lovely ads for Marks and Spencers. So despite the fact that some people are naturally single, everybody still worries. In fact, in everyday life, we use phrases like strength in numbers and if we all stick together. Sometimes I imagine everyone who lives with their partner or their family, and then everyone they live with suddenly disappears. Puff, gone. There they are, staring at their dining room table that has too many chairs and too much cutlery. Then I remember, I live on my own. I went through all those life stages. Get married at 28? No. Have children at 33? No. So now I'm wondering if I was destined to have a lone life right from the start. And I'm not the only one. There are 7 million people who live on their own in this country. I was raised with my brother by a single mum, so obviously I'm profoundly damaged because single mothers are a handful. Actually, all mums are a handful. Mums are weird and they get away with it. I know this chap, and his mum wears all his clothes he left behind when he moved out. There she is doing the church flowers, wearing a Prodigy sweatshirt from the 90s. In the 1970s, our mum took us to the Single Parent Caravan Club, where all us kids had one thing in common, no dad. A campsite full of fatherless children. To be fair, there was one dad who was run into the ground from lighting barbecues, fishing tennis balls out of nettle patches and reversing caravans by day, and being chased round a field by 80 sex-starved single mums at night. I've been reading Robinson Crusoe line by line and page by page, and there is a problem, a major problem. Robinson hasn't mentioned sex once. If I follow Robinson's lifestyle choices, I might never have sex again. Such a waste. I'd be lying if I said that I never thought about boyfriends. Of course I did, I still do. I do try and avoid being single. I'm jealous of people in relationships, and I was secretly pleased when the sweet couple from book club split up. Maybe Robinson didn't need a relationship. We're told a billion times during the course of our lives that being in a partnership is essential. Really? Do I need a man? I've got Jack the dog. He gets up in the morning, has a poo, then goes back to bed. Tell me the difference. I've been thinking about this, and of course there's a difference. It's about physical proximity, touching. Everyone needs to be touched. We don't do enough. If you are lonely, it's not the love you do not receive. It's the love you are unable to give. All that unused love filling bottle after bottle like homebrew under the stairs fermenting. And then the corks turn mouldy and the wine is given up as undrinkable and then it is forgotten about, then skipped. Why Providence should thus completely ruin its creatures. and render them so absolutely miserable, so without help, abandoned, so entirely depressed, that it should hardly be rational to be thankful for such a life. Robinson makes a plan. First, health and fresh water. Secondly, shelter from the heat of the sun. Thirdly, security from ravenous creatures, whether men or beasts. Fourthly, a view to the sea, that if God sent any ship in sight, I might not lose any advantage of my deliverance. Humans need to be around living creatures, and if we can't find one with two legs, we'll find one with four. In India, they like cows. In fact, cows are sacred, so you're not allowed to kill them or be mean to them. I could go home tonight to find a cow hogging the sofa, and I couldn't tell her to get off or even budge up. We think that's strange, but in this country we keep hamsters and buy cages that cost £75, and then we fill them with little slides and castles which cost another £75. And then the hamster dies. Robinson kept pets, a dog, a parrot and a goat, and they all rub along together. Then, after a couple of years or so, Robinson does this extraordinary thing. He decides that the jungle is so plentiful and beautiful, he builds another shelter and even calls it his summer house. He's basically a second homeowner. He better not come to Cornwall. And he stops feeling like an unfortunate dog born only to misery and starts thinking, did not 11 of you go into the boat? Where are the other 10? Why were they not saved and you lost? And it occurred to me again how well furnished I am for my subsistence. Robinson focuses on what he has got and not what he hasn't. I decided to do the same. Inventory, as well as my lovely friends and family. Game of Thrones box set. Thermos flask. Nail files assorted. Bisto gravy granules. Tin of paint. A car. 100 vitamin B tablets. A standard lamp. Some towels. A plug-in heater. A book about how to breathe properly. Felt-tip pens. Flip-flops. A set of placemats. String. A hammer. A gadget that helps me undo lids on jam jars. Clothes pegs. And the remote control is mine. But it's just so hard when the whole world is geared up for couples. Models on the cover of wedding magazines mouth the word loser at me. But here's what Robinson says next. He realises that he used to think, why has God done this to me? And then he starts thinking, what did I do? He's beginning to grasp that he was destined to wash up on the island because of all the decisions he'd made in his life, right up to the moment he stepped on the ship that later sailed into a storm. Me too. Decisions I didn't even realise I was making. One of my exes lost 2 stone and got a promotion right after we split up. He did that on purpose to annoy me. I have had relationships, clearly, and apart from a couple of absolute howlers, they've all been very nice, as a matter of fact. And whilst it might not bother Robinson, I do miss intimacy. So when it comes to searching for it, I have no shame. Don't act desperate, I hear my friends cry. It isn't an act. I am desperate. My friends obviously have more poise than me, more dignity. A married friend of mine said she wouldn't go to bed with Tom Hiddleston in case he didn't find her attractive the next morning. God, I would. He could have me sectioned the next day. Who cares? Robinson doesn't have a date, doesn't have a telly, doesn't have any mates. And as he's been on the island for about 10 years now, he's really beginning to smell. But despite all that, he's got his pets, his 2 houses, fresh water and a great tan. So, with a big smile on his face, he declares one morning, I might be more happy in this solitary condition than I would have been in society with all the pleasures of the world. Robinson is happier on his own. But that might be okay for Robinson, but what about us in our world right now? I found something intriguing on the internet. Listen to this. A Dr. Bella DiPaolo from the University of California said that studies into relationships found when people marry, they become more insular, and the preoccupations of loneliness can obscure the profound benefits of solitude. Then she discovered that those who remain single experience a sense of development as a person, had a richer social life, were more likely to value their work, are more connected to their families, friends, neighbours and colleagues. Amazing, isn't it? If you're on your own, you're more likely not to be on your own. The idea of friendship rubs off on Robinson too, so after 11 years alone on the island, he finds the footprint in the sand. Enter Man Friday. Robinson rescues Friday from cannibals who are about to cook him. Man Friday is so grateful, he kind of falls in love with Robinson. It's the perfect bromance. If they were around today, you'd find them playing Grand Theft Auto together. But there is one singular problem with their relationship. The first English word Robinson teaches Friday is master. He is the master and Friday is the servant. Maybe that's where I've gone wrong. Because that's what I've been looking for all these years. A man Friday. I'm colonial by nature. I want to colonise a man. Grill me a pork chop or I'll have you flogged. And I love men. I have amazing male friends. Stand out. I like being with men. I work with men. Go on holiday with them. Go to parties. Go dancing with men. It wasn't always like that. When I was growing up, no lad would dance with a fat girl. Even fat boys didn't dance with fat girls. And you can't always dance on your own, can you? Because then we'd never procreate and the species would die out. Babies. Yeah, pretty much most of us women, not all, but most of us think about having a baby. And the men too. In my 20s, I did not want to get pregnant, and any man who came near me had to be vacuum sealed. But by the time I turned 33, I really needed a baby, a family of my own. And I tried everything, and bit by bit, and year by year, the dread of knowing it was not going to happen intensified. That ocean of dread is like the water that almost drowned Robinson. That ocean welled up and swelled around me and all the other men and women who needed a child and didn't get one. We bob around in the sea, and the land is too far away to reach, so our limbs tire, and in the heat of the day our lips chap, our skin burns, our eyes blister, throats dry and swell. Then, as night falls and the air cools, we can no longer stay afloat, so our bodies sink under the waves. For as long as we can, we hold our breath, but then finally our mouths snap open. Salt water fills our lungs along with the pain. From then on, we live as drowned people. Our homes are filled floor to ceiling with seawater, and we drift from room to room. Our hair floats in the silence. Clothes twist about our torsos. Our eyes sink and our bodies bloat. And we are lost and all is lost at sea. Learn to swim underwater. Fingers, hands, arms stretch out and stroke and stroke and stroke the underwater world, and feet and legs and hips kick, kick, kick as we swim out of our sunken homes, down our streets, over the main roads, and we hammer on the door of our friend's house. She opens the door and a great wave of seawater pukes us onto her welcome mat.
We look up, coughing and spluttering, and say to our friend, "Can I take your children to see Finding Nemo, My Treat?" And she says, "Yes, please, that would be great." And those kids, godchildren, nieces and nephews, are like little life buoys and armbands and rubber rings, and they keep us afloat. Robinson deployed coping strategies. This is what I must do. More reading. This time, self-help books, most of which take a large word count to say, your life is shit, try not to lose your temper. This month, I've been practicing my favourite coping strategies. They are as follows. Be nice and help people. Robinson and Friday help a stranded sea captain, a victim of a mutiny. Robinson and Friday could have hid in the jungle and left the captain to his grisly fate, but they don't. They get involved. The captain's ship is anchored close to the island shore. The crew are drunk and violent. Robinson and Friday carry out this clever plan to round up the crew and overwhelm them. This is very dangerous. I too do very dangerous things when I'm giving a helping hand. I've been on family outings. I've been to the family fun farm. Explain what's fun about standing in pig shit yelling at a mediocre horse to come over and say hello. Hello, horse! Hello, horse! Come over! Come on! Come on! Have a sugar lump! Oh, for fuck's sake! Oh, no! I've used the F word in front of the kids. I hope they don't split on me to their parents. On reflection, I think I should ditch the idea of getting fresh air. And if I'm looking after my little friends, we should stay in and watch telly, like I did when I was a kid. Last year, I wrote that if you are on your own, no one wants the love you have to give. I no longer believe that to be true. Everybody needs it. And by recognising this, we avoid being lonely and we add 10 years to our lifespan. Robinson and Friday showed compassion when it mattered most. So in return, the Spanish sea captain offers Robinson and Friday safe passage to England. After 37 years away, Robinson arrives home. But wait, Robinson said he'd never been happier than when he was alone on the island. So why didn't he stay? He came back because he had something important to share. His parents, all those years before, went ballistic and warned him not to venture out on his own because his life would be terrible. Robinson had to come back to his hometown to tell everyone that his parents were wrong. Life on his own was not terrible, far from it, because Robinson overcame one of the biggest challenges human beings ever have to face, the ability to live with yourself. If it is winter and it is dark and quiet and you are on your own, you will be all right. And that's a great feeling. When people are ill or they've lost their job, we rush over and ask, "Are you all right?" Not, "Are you perfect?" Just, "Are you all right?" Because being all right is exactly where we need to be in life. And for Robinson, it was the same. After 37 years on a tropical island, he returns in one piece. There's no hero's welcome, he just gets on with his life, and he's all right. And I'm all right. And my dog is all right. Are you? I hope so.
Thank you, Jane, that was amazing.
Thank you.
You teach script writing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I teach script writing at Falmouth University. My philosophy is to really explore the reason why somebody wants to write. And with a bit of reflection, a bit of soul searching, the truth will out. So a student or a workshop participant might say they want to write a story about Russian Cold War espionage. What they really want to write about is how their father lied to them. And once we've got to that inner truth, the story will unfold.
To what extent do you think you could do what you do and be the person who you are if you didn't live in Cornwall?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it is easier to do it in Cornwall because there is less noise and less stimuli, and it means that the people that I'm working with, whoever they are more alone with themselves, and that is what you have to do. For a story to resonate with an audience, the writer and the writer-performer has to be willing to share something that is really important to them. And that allows the audience to reflect on what's really important to the audience.
Do you have a favourite place in Cornwall?
Oh yeah, I absolutely have a favourite place. It's the sea. I go swimming with mates off Battery Rock in Penzance.
In fact, the poster that you did for the piece of writing that you've just done is a picture of you in the sea.
That's
with your dog,
yeah,
isn't it?
I love going swimming with my dog Jack, and it mirrors narrative. So in story, your hero is on the side, then they have to plunge into the adventure, and then they have to resolve it by getting back out again.
Do you still swim at this time of year?
No, I absolutely do not swim at this time of year, and nothing will make me do so. Some people, you know, they say it's really, I mean, it genuinely is, you know, it's really good for your mental health, but, you know, I'll take antidepressants in the winter.
It was great spending a bit of time with Jane. She's very warm, isn't she? So now I'm about to interview somebody called Emily Stevenson, who's going to be in the next episode of Cornwall Woman. She calls herself the Beach Guardian, and she's going to talk to me about all sorts of things, including, obviously, her environmental concerns, other issues like well-being and bullying. So if you haven't done already, please subscribe to Cornwall Woman. You can do that on iTunes or Podbean or wherever you're listening to this now. And I look forward to joining you again very soon on a quiet beach.